Principles of Economics textbook. Textbook available for free at cnx.org. Audio recording available for free at educateforfree.com. Summary, Chapter 1, 1.1. What is economics and why is it important? Economics seeks to solve the problem of scarcity, which is when human wants for goods and services exceed the available supply. A modern economy displays a division of labor in which people earn income by specializing in what they produce and then use that income to purchase the products they need or want. The division of labor allows individuals and firms to specialize and to produce more for several reasons. A, it allows the agents to focus on areas of advantage due to natural factors and skill levels. B, it encourages the agents to learn and invent. C, it allows agents to take advantage of economies of scale. Division and specialization of labor only work when individuals can purchase what they do not produce in markets. Learning about economics helps you understand the major problems facing the world today, prepares you to be a good citizen, and helps you to become a well-rounded thinker. 1.2. Microeconomics and macroeconomics. Microeconomics and macroeconomics are two different perspectives on the economy. The microeconomic perspective focuses on parts of the economy, individuals, firms, and industries. The macroeconomic perspective looks at the economy as a whole, focusing on goals like growth in the standard of living, unemployment, and inflation. Macroeconomics has two types of policies for pursuing these goals, monetary policy and fiscal policy. 1.3. How economists use theories and models to understand economic issues. Economists analyze problems differently than do other disciplinary experts. The main tools economists use are economic theories or models. A theory is not an illustration of the answer to a problem. Rather, a theory is a tool for determining the answer. 1.4. How economies can be organized. An overview of economic systems. Societies can be organized as traditional, command, or market-oriented economies. Most societies are a mix. The last few decades have seen globalization evolve as a result of growth in commercial and financial networks that cross national borders, making businesses and workers from different economies increasingly interdependent. Chapter 2, 2.1, How Individuals Make Choices Based on Their Budget Constraint. Economists see the real world as one of scarcity, that is, a world in which people's desires exceed what is possible. As a result, economic behavior involves trade-offs in which individuals, firms, and society must give up something that they desire to obtain things that they desire more. Individuals face the trade-off of what quantities of goods and services to consume. The budget constraint, which is the frontier of the opportunity set, illustrates the range of choices available. The slope of the budget constraint is determined by the relative price of the choices. Choices beyond the budget constraint are not affordable. Opportunity cost measures cost by what is given up in exchange. Sometimes opportunity costs can be measured in money, but it is often useful to consider time as well, or to measure it in terms of the actual resources that must be given up. Most economic decisions and trade-offs are not all or nothing. Instead, they involve marginal analysis, which means they are about decisions on the margin, involving a little more or a little less. The law of diminishing marginal utility points out that as a person receives more of something, whether it is a specific good or another resource, the additional marginal gains tend to become smaller. Because sunk costs occurred in the past and cannot be recovered, they should be disregarded in making current decisions. 2.2. The production possibilities frontier and social choices. A production possibilities frontier defines the set of choices society faces for the combination of goods and services it can produce given the resources available. The shape of the PPF is typically curved outward rather than straight. Choices outside the PPF are unattainable, and choices inside the PPF are wasteful. Over time, a growing economy will tend to shift the PPF outwards. The law of diminishing returns holds that as increments of additional resources are devoted to producing something, the marginal increase in output will become smaller and smaller. All choices along a production possibilities frontier display productive efficiency. That is, it is impossible to use society's resources to produce more of one good without decreasing production of the other good. The specific choice along a production possibilities frontier that reflects the mix of goods society prefers is the choice with allocative efficiency. The curvature of the PPF is likely to differ by country, which results in different countries having comparative advantage in different goods. Total production can increase if countries specialize in the goods they have comparative advantage in and trade some of their production for the remaining goods. 2.3. Confronting objections to the economic approach. The economic way of thinking provides a useful approach to understanding human behavior. Economists make the careful distinction between positive statements, which describe the world as it is, and normative statements, which describe how the world should be. Even when economics analyzes the gains and losses from various events or policies, and thus draws normative conclusions about how the world should be, the analysis of economics is rooted in a positive analysis of how people, firms, and governments actually behave, not how they should behave. Chapter 3, 3.1, Demand, Supply, and Equilibrium in Markets for Goods and Services. A demand schedule is a table that shows the quantity demanded at different prices in the market. A demand curve shows the relationship between quantity demanded and price in a given market on a graph. The law of demand states that a higher price typically leads to a lower quantity demanded. A supply schedule is a table that shows the quantity supplied at different prices in the market. A supply curve shows the relationship between quantity supplied and price on a graph. The law of supply says that a higher price typically leads to a higher quantity supplied. The equilibrium price and equilibrium quantity occur where the supply and demand curves cross. The equilibrium occurs where the quantity demanded is equal to the quantity supplied. If the price is below the equilibrium level, then the quantity demanded will exceed the quantity supplied. Excess demand or shortage will exist. If the price is above the equilibrium level, then the quantity supplied will exceed the quantity demanded. Excess supply or a surplus will exist. In either case, economic pressures will push the price toward the equilibrium level. 3.2. Shifts in demand and supply for goods and services. Economists often use the cateris paribus or other things being equal assumption. While examining the economic impact of one event, all other factors remain unchanged for the purpose of the analysis. Factors that can shift the demand curve for goods and services, causing a different quantity to be demanded at any given price, include changes in tastes, population, income, prices of substitute or complement goods, and expectations about future conditions and prices. Factors that can shift the supply curve for goods and services, causing a different quantity to be supplied at any given price, include input prices, natural conditions, changes in technology, and government taxes, regulations, or subsidies. 3.3. Changes in equilibrium price and quantity, the four-step process. When using the supply and demand framework to think about how an event will affect the equilibrium price and quantity, proceed through four steps. 1. Sketch a supply and demand diagram to think about what the market looked like before the event. 2. Decide whether the event will affect supply or demand. 3. Decide whether the effect on supply and demand is negative or positive and draw the appropriate shifted supply or demand curve. Number four, compare the new equilibrium price and quantity to the original ones. 3.4, price ceilings and price floors. Price ceilings prevent a price from rising above a certain level. When a price ceiling is set below the equilibrium price, quantity demanded will exceed quantity supplied, and excess demand or shortages will result. Price floors prevent a price from falling below a certain level. When a price floor is set above the equilibrium price, quantity supplied will exceed the quantity demanded, and excess supply or surpluses will result. Price floors and price ceilings often lead to unintended consequences. 3.5. Demand, supply, and efficiency. Consumer surplus is the gap between the price that consumers are willing to pay based on their preferences and the market equilibrium price. Producer surplus is the gap between the price for which producers are willing to sell a product based on their costs and the market equilibrium price. Social surplus is the sum of consumer surplus and producer surplus. Total surplus is larger at the equilibrium quantity and price than it will be at any other quantity and price. Deadweight loss is loss in total surplus that occurs when the economy produces at an inefficient quantity. Chapter 4, 4.1, Demand and Supply at Work in Labor Markets. In the labor market, households are on the supply side of the market and firms are on the demand side. In the market for financial capital, households and firms can be on either side of the market. They are suppliers of financial capital when they save or make financial investments, and demanders of financial capital when they borrow or receive financial investments. In the demand and supply analysis of labor markets, the price can be measured by the annual salary or hourly wage received. The quantity of labor can be measured in various ways, like number of workers or the number of hours worked. Factors that can shift the demand curve for labor include a change in the quantity demanded of the product that the labor produces, a change in the production process that uses more or less labor, and a change in government policy that affects the quantity of labor that firms wish to hire at a given wage. Demand can also increase or decrease or shift in response to workers' level of education and training, technology, the number of companies, and availability and price of other inputs. The main factors that can shift the supply curve for labor are how desirable a job appears to workers relative to the alternatives, government policy that either restricts or encourages the quantity of workers trained for the job, the number of workers in the economy, and required education. 4.2, demand and supply in financial markets. In the demand and supply analysis of financial markets, the price is the rate of return or the interest rate received. The quantity is measured by the money that flows from those who supply financial capital to those who demand it. Two factors can shift the supply of financial capital to a certain investment. If people want to alter their existing level of consumption, and if the riskiness or return on one investment changes relative to other investments. Factors that can shift demand for capital include business confidence and consumer confidence in the future, since financial investments received in the present are typically repaid in the future. 4.3, the market system as an efficient mechanism for information. The market price system provides a highly efficient mechanism for disseminating information about relative scarcities of goods, services, labor, and financial capital. Market participants do not need to know why prices have changed, only that changes require them to revisit previous decisions they made about supply and demand. Price controls hide information about the true scarcity of products and thereby cause misallocation of resources. Chapter 5, 5.1, Price Elasticity of Demand and Price Elasticity of Supply. Price elasticity measures the responsiveness of the quantity demanded or supplied of a good to a change in its price. It is computed as the percentage change in quantity demanded or supplied divided by the percentage change in the price. Elasticity can be described as elastic or very responsive, unit elastic or inelastic, which is not very responsive. Elastic demand or supply curves indicate that quantity demanded or supplied respond to price changes in a greater than proportional manner. An inelastic demand or supply curve is one where a given percentage change in price will cause a smaller percentage change in quantity demanded or supplied. A unitary elasticity means that a given percentage change in price leads to an equal percentage change in quantity demanded or supplied. 5.2. Polar cases of elasticity and constant elasticity. Infinite or perfect elasticity refers to the extreme case where either the quantity demanded or supplied changes by an infinite amount in response to any change in price at all. Zero elasticity refers to the extreme case in which a percentage change in price, no matter how large, results in zero change in quantity. Constant unitary elasticity in either a supply or demand curve refers to a situation where a price change of 1% results in a quantity change of 1%. 5.3. Elasticity and pricing. In the market for goods and services, quantity supplied and quantity demanded are often relatively slow to react to changes in price in the short run, but react more substantially in the long run. As a result, demand and supply often, but not always, tend to be relatively inelastic in the short run and relatively elastic in the long run. The tax incidence depends on the relative price elasticity of supply and demand. When supply is more elastic than demand, buyers bear most of the tax burden, and when demand is more elastic than supply, producers bear most of the cost of the tax. Tax revenue is larger the more inelastic the demand and supply are. 5.4. Elasticity in areas other than price. Elasticity is a general term referring to percentage change of one variable divided by percentage change of a related variable that can be applied to many economic connections. For instance, the income elasticity of demand is the percentage change in quantity demanded divided by the percentage change in income. The cross-price elasticity of demand is the percentage change in the quantity demanded of a good divided by the percentage change in the price of another good. Elasticity applies in labor markets and financial capital markets just as it does in markets for goods and services. The wage elasticity of labor supply is the percentage change in the quantity of hours supplied divided by the percentage change in the wage. The elasticity of savings with respect to interest rates is the percentage change in the quantity of savings divided by the percentage change in interest rates. Chapter 6, 6.1, Consumption Choices. Economic analysis of household behavior is based on the assumption that people seek the highest level of utility or satisfaction. Individuals are the only judge of their own utility. In general, greater consumption of a good brings higher total utility. However, the additional utility received from each unit of greater consumption tends to decline in a pattern of diminishing marginal utility. The utility maximizing choice on a consumption budget constraint can be found in several ways. You can add up total utility of each choice on the budget line and choose the highest total. You can choose a starting point at random and compare the marginal utility gains and losses of moving to neighboring points, and thus eventually seek out the preferred choice. Alternatively, you can compare the ratio of the marginal utility to price of good 1 with the marginal utility to price of good 2, and apply the rule that at the optimal choice, the two ratios should be equal, or MU1 divided by P1, equals MU2 divided by P2. 6.2. How changes in income and prices affect consumption choices. The budget constraint framework suggests that when income or price changes, a range of responses are possible. When income rises, households will demand a higher quantity of normal goods, but a lower quantity of inferior goods. When the price of a good rises, households will typically demand less of that good, but whether they will demand a much lower quantity or only a slightly lower quantity will depend on personal preferences. Also, a higher price for one good can lead to more or less of the other good being demanded. 6.3. Labor-leisure choices. When making a choice along the labor-leisure budget constraint, a household will choose the combination of labor, leisure, and income that provides the most utility. The result of a change in wage levels can be higher work hours, the same work hours, or lower work hours. 6.4. Intertemporal choices in financial capital markets. When making a choice along the intertemporal budget constraint, a household will choose the combination of present consumption, savings, and future consumption that provides the most utility. The result of a higher rate of return or higher interest rate can be a higher quantity of saving, the same quantity of saving, or a lower quantity of saving, depending on the preferences about present and future consumption. Behavioral economics is a branch of economics that seeks to understand and explain the human factors that drive what traditional economists see as people's irrational spending decisions. Chapter 7, 7.1, Explicit and Implicit Costs in Accounting and Economic Profit. Privately owned firms are motivated to earn profits. Profit is the difference between revenues and costs. While accounting profit considers only explicit costs, economic profit considers both explicit and implicit costs. 7.2. The structure of costs in the short run. In a short run perspective, a firm's total costs can be divided into fixed costs, which a firm must incur before producing any output, and variable costs, which the firm incurs in the act of producing. Fixed costs are sunk costs. That is, because they are in the past and cannot be altered, they should play no role in economic decisions about the future production or pricing. Variable costs typically show diminishing marginal returns, so that the marginal cost of producing higher levels of output rises. Marginal cost is calculated by taking the change in total cost, or the change in variable cost, which will be the same thing, and dividing it by the change in output for each possible change in output. Marginal costs are typically rising. A firm can compare marginal costs to the additional revenue it gains from selling another unit to find out whether its marginal unit is adding to profit. Average total cost is calculated by taking total cost and dividing by total output at each different level of output. Average costs are typically U-shaped on a graph. If a firm's average cost of production is lower than the market price, a firm will be earning profits. Average variable cost is calculated by taking variable cost and dividing by the total output at each level of output. Average variable costs are typically U-shaped. If a firm's average variable cost of production is lower than the market price, then the firm would be earning profits if fixed costs are left out of the picture. 7.3. The structure of costs in the long run. A production technology refers to a specific combination of labor, physical capital, and technology that makes up a particular method of production. In the long run, firms can choose their production technology, and so all costs become variable costs. In making this choice, firms will try to substitute relatively inexpensive inputs for relatively expensive inputs where possible, so as to produce at the lowest possible long-run average cost. Economies of scale refer to a situation where, as the level of output increases, the average cost decreases. Constant returns to scale refers to a situation where average cost does not change as output increases. Diseconomies of scale refers to a situation where, as output increases, average costs increase also. The long-run average cost curve shows the lowest possible average cost of production, allowing all the inputs to production to vary so that the firm is choosing its production technology. A downward sloping LRAC shows economies of scale. A flat LRAC shows constant returns to scale. An upward sloping LRAC shows diseconomies of scale. If the long-run average cost curve has only one quantity produced that results in the lowest possible average cost, then all of the firms competing in an industry should be the same size. However, if the LRAC has a flat segment at the bottom so that a range of different quantities can be produced at the lowest average cost, the firms competing in the industry will display a range of sizes. The market demand in conjunction with the long-run average cost curve determines how many firms will exist in a given industry. If the quantity demanded in the market of a certain product is much greater than the quantity found at the bottom of the long-run average cost curve, where the cost of production is lowest, the market will have many firms competing. If the quantity demanded in the market is less than the quantity at the bottom of the LRAC, there will likely be only one firm. Chapter 8, 8.1, Perfect Competition and Why It Matters. A perfectly competitive firm is a price taker, which means that it must accept the equilibrium price at which it sells goods. If a perfectly competitive firm attempts to charge even a tiny amount more than the market price, it will be unable to make any sales. In a perfectly competitive market, there are thousands of sellers, easy entry, and identical products. A short-run production period is when firms are producing with some fixed inputs. Long-run equilibrium in a perfectly competitive industry occurs after all firms have entered and exited the industry and seller profits are driven to zero. Perfect competition means that there are many sellers. There is easy entry and exiting of firms. Products are identical from one seller to another, and sellers are price takers. 8.2. How perfectly competitive firms make output decisions. As a perfectly competitive firm produces a greater quantity of output, its total revenue steadily increases at a constant rate determined by the given market price. Profits will be highest, or losses will be smallest, at the quantity of output where total revenues exceed total costs by the greatest amount, or where total revenues fall short of total costs by the smallest amount. Alternatively, profits will be highest where marginal revenue, which is price for a perfectly competitive firm, is equal to marginal cost. If the market price faced by a perfectly competitive firm is above average cost at the profit-maximizing quantity of output, then the firm is making profits. If the market price is below average cost at the profit-maximizing quantity of output, then the firm is making losses. If the market price is equal to average cost at the profit-maximizing level of output, then the firm is making zero profits. The point where the marginal cost curve crosses the average cost curve at the minimum of the average cost curve is called the zero profit point. If the market price faced by a perfectly competitive firm is below average variable cost at the profit-maximizing quantity of output, then the firm should shut down operations immediately. If the market price faced by a perfectly competitive firm is above average variable cost, but below average cost, then the firm should continue producing in the short run, but exit in the long run. The point where the marginal cost curve crosses the average variable cost curve is called the shutdown point. 8.3, entry and exit decisions in the long run. In the long run, firms will respond to profits through a process of entry where exiting firms expand output and new firms enter the market. Conversely, firms will react to losses in the long run through a process of exit, in which exiting firms reduce output or cease production altogether. Through the process of entry in response to profits and exit in response to losses, the price level in a perfectly competitive market will move toward the zero profit point where the marginal cost curve crosses the AC curve at the minimum of the average cost curve. The long-run supply curve shows the long-run output supplied by firms in three different types of industries: constant cost, increasing cost, and decreasing cost. 8.4, efficiency in perfectly competitive markets. Long-run equilibrium in perfectly competitive markets meets two important conditions: allocative efficiency and productive efficiency. These two conditions have important implications. First, resources are allocated to their best alternative use. Second, they provide the maximum satisfaction attainable by society. Chapter 9, 9.1, How monopolies form, barriers to entry. Barriers to entry prevent or discourage competitors from entering the market. These barriers include economies of scale that lead to natural monopoly, control of physical resource, legal restrictions on competition, patent, trademark, and copyright protection, and practices to intimidate the competition like predatory pricing. Intellectual property refers to legally guaranteed ownership of an idea rather than a physical item. The laws that protect intellectual property include patents, copyrights, trademarks, and trade secrets. A natural monopoly arises when economies of scale persist over a large enough range of output that if one firm supplies the entire market, no other firm can enter without facing a cost disadvantage. 9.2. How a profit-maximizing monopoly chooses output and price. A monopolist is not a price taker because when it decides what quantity to produce, it also determines the market price. For a monopolist, total revenue is relatively low at low quantities of output because not much is being sold. Total revenue is also relatively low at very high quantities of output because a very high quantity will sell only at a low price. Thus, total revenue for a monopolist will start low, rise, and then decline. The marginal revenue for a monopolist from selling additional units will decline. Each additional unit sold by a monopolist will push down the overall market price, and as more units are sold, this lower price applies to more and more units. The monopolist will select the profit-maximizing level of output where MR equals MC, and then charge the price for that quantity of output as determined by the market demand curve. If that price is above average cost, the monopolist earns positive profits. Monopolists are not productively efficient because they do not produce at the minimum of the average cost curve. Monopolists are not allocatively efficient because they do not produce at the quantity where P equals MC. As a result, monopolists produce less at a higher average cost and charge a higher price than would a combination of firms in a perfectly competitive industry. Monopolists also may lack incentives for innovation because they need not fear entry. Chapter 10, 10.1, Monopolistic Competition. Monopolistic competition refers to a market where many firms sell differentiated products. Differentiated products can arise from characteristics of the good or service, location from which the product is sold, intangible aspects of the product, and the perceptions of the product. The perceived demand curve for a monopolistically competitive firm is downward sloping, which shows that it is a price maker and chooses a combination of price and quantity. However, the perceived demand curve for a monopolistic competitor is more elastic than the perceived demand curve for a monopolist, because the monopolistic competitor has direct competition, unlike the pure monopolist. A profit-maximizing monopolistic competitor will seek out the quantity where marginal revenue is equal to marginal cost. The monopolistic competitor will produce that level of output and charge the price that is indicated by the firm's demand curve. If the firms in a monopolistically competitive industry are earning economic profits, the industry will attract entry until profits are driven down to zero in the long run. If the firms in a monopolistically competitive industry are suffering economic losses, then the industry will experience exit of firms until economic profits are driven up to zero in the long run. A monopolistically competitive firm is not productively efficient because it does not produce at the minimum of its average cost curve. A monopolistically competitive firm is not allocatively efficient because it does not produce where P equals MC, but instead produces where P is greater than MC. Thus, a monopolistically competitive firm will tend to produce a lower quantity at a higher cost and to charge a higher price than a perfectly competitive firm. Monopolistically competitive industries do offer benefits to consumers in the form of greater variety and incentives for improved products and services. There is some controversy over whether a market-oriented economy generates too much variety. 10.2. oligopoly. An oligopoly is a situation where a few firms sell most or all of the goods in a market. Oligopolists earn their highest profits if they can band together as a cartel and act like a monopolist by reducing output and raising prices. Since each member of the oligopoly can benefit individually from expanding output, such collusion often breaks down, especially since explicit collusion is illegal. The prisoner's dilemma is an example of game theory. It shows how, in certain situations, all sides can benefit from cooperative behavior rather than self-interested behavior. However, the challenge for the parties is to find ways to encourage cooperative behavior.